Okay, good morning. We're finished the fifth parak of Sefer Yeshua, and we ended off with a very strange story with Yeshua on the outskirts of Yericho being confronted by a malach. And what is the story telling us over here? Again, Yeshua lifts up his eyes. He sees something that appears to be a human being that stands before him with an outstretched sword towards him. Yeshua asks him, "Are you for us or are you for our enemy?" He says, "No, I'm a Sar Tzva Hashem. I'm a general for Hashem. Atobosi, now I have come." Doesn't really answer the question. Yeshua falls on his face. He bows down to him. He says, what does my master have to tell me? He says, take your shoe off your foot because the place that you're treading on is holy. And he did so. So like, what's going on over here? So, continuing in the booklet, in the Pershios, the Sifra Nevi'im, we're skipping a few pages. There's a lot of stuff here, but I'm trying to focus on the main ideas here. So we're on page Mem Dalad. So we're going to skip a couple pages. Page Mem Dalad, the bold line that says, Omka shal halacha va'omek hadin. So let's see what's going on over here. Now, there is a whole general I talk, and I'm skipping this whole idea of to show the differences of how Hashem was with the Jewish people during Moshe's time as opposed to Yeshua's time, and Moshe's holiness did not require and did not allow a malach at all to be involved in their travelings. It was only Hashem. And now there'll be a malach as well, so there'll be some kind of go-between Hashem's direct, total involvement. And I don't want to get into that. But that's what's going to make reference to in the first line. But we're looking now on page Memdal beneath the bold line, about 10 lines from the top. He says, V'hine kiblu chazal kabbalah nemona. But our rabbis of the Talmud, they have a Kabbalah, they have a Masorah, tradition. It's not just because there's a different change of how God will direct us, came the Malach. But here's the point we want to focus on. The angel is coming to give a veiled rebuke in order to perfect the deeds of the Jewish people. And how did the rabbi see this? What was the hint? It came in the words, V'ne'ish oimed lenegdo. A man is standing opposite him, V'charbo shlufo biyado, with an outstretched sword in his hand. So now, Ha'ish b'charbo hashlufo lenegdo. There's a man with an outstretched sword against him. Now, b'shlosha makomos b'shas, muvoim hadvarim b'shinuim. There's three different places in the Talmud, in Maseches Erevin, Megillah, and Sanhedrin, where they bring you an account of what really was going on with minor changes in all three places. But the point is, l'lamdecha, the whole message, as we'll see, is to teach you, as oimek midas hadin b'mekdushasav, the depth of how God judges those that are His holy ones, how much Hashem requires from them, as darchei hatikun b'derech shleimus, the way that perfection has to come, as sulam ha'archim b'archas mitzvus Hashem, and the value of mitzvus, how they are in Hashem's eyes, and how much Hashem expects the tzaddikim to live up to the delicate nature that is required of them. So now, the next few lines, he quotes the Gemara in Erevin. Amar Rav Abba Bar Papa. Rav Abba Bar Papa says, Lo nenash Yeshua. Yeshua was punished. In other words, the only reason he was punished, and Rashi tells you what his punishment was, Lios Ariri. He did not father sons. He had daughters, but did not have sons. He was punished for not having sons. No one would continue the Yeshua line, so to speak. Why was he punished? Because he nullified from the Jewish people one night of men and women, husbands and wives, living together and being able to fulfill the mitzvah of being fruitful and multiplying. Therefore, he was punished not to be fruitful and multiply. Shenemar, how do we know this? And it's from these texts. It says, Vayhi Bios Yeshua of Yericho was when Yeshua was at the outskirts of Yericho, Vayhi Seinam, he lifted up his eyes from here, and he saw the Malach. And he says, are you with us or against us? Vayomer lo. He says, no. Ki ani sarts v'Hashem atabasi. I am the officer of Hashem, and now I have come. So the Gemara says, we see from this story that he was punished for keeping the husbands and wives away from each other. But then he go on. Amar lo, he says, Emish bitaltem tamid shalban habayim. This past day you have nullified the korban tamid in the afternoon. And now as he's coming at night, va'achshav bitaltem talmud Torah. And now you have nullified the study of Torah. Now why is that happening? So the understanding is because the Jewish people had begun their siege on the city of Yericho, and that was going on even at night, and because they were involved with their siege on Yericho, they were not studying Torah, as will be fully developed here. But that was the problem. It's nighttime. All the soldiers are in the ready. Amar lo. So Yeshua says, so if that's the case, I've done two things wrong. Aleizim and Basim. So what are you coming for? You got to sort out to me. So it must be you're coming to give me a punishment, right? Amar lo atabasi. I'm coming for now. What does now mean? Now? Now is the sin for the now. The now is we're not learning Torah. The Korban Tamid was past. But now it's time for Torah. So I'm coming now. Right now is the problem. Miyad, so immediately Yeshua got the message, and in his next opportunity, which will be later on in the battle of Ai, it says, Vayelach Yeshua b'laylahu b'toch ha'emek. Yeshua went on that night from amidst the valley, and the Gemara explains, Rabbi Yochanan melame shalach b'oim keshalacha. He went into the depths of halacha, means that he studied Torah well. So he picked up that message. Ugemiri, and it has been taught the following, and here's the whole point. The Kolzman Sha'ar Nushchina Shurin Shlobim Komam, whenever the Ark and the holiness of Hashem are not resting in their proper place, so that means there's a state of Tzara, there's a state of a problem, of calamity. And therefore, Asurim B'tashra Shamita, people are forbidden to have marital relations when the Ark is not in its right place. And Rashi comments, and that's what the brackets are telling us, that on that night that the Malach gave them the rebuke, they weren't learning Torah because they were surrounding the city. They did not return the Ark in the evening time to its place in Gilgal. And as well at night, they were not able to be engaged in marital relations. And the Gemara concludes, Amar Rav Shmuel bar Unya Mishmei Derav, Godel Talmud Torah Yosef Markrovis Tamidim Domer Le'atabasi, that the study of Torah is even more important than the bringing of the Talmud offering. Because the angel said, now, I'm coming for now. Now is the problem of Torah, more so than that of the Korban Tamid, that I didn't come when you were nullifying the Korban Tamid. Okay, it's a very enigmatic Gemara. But you see from this Gemara that there's three issues that went on over here. That Yeshua, not intentionally, was making a mistake. Now, we see from here that the Jews, you gotta remember, as we finished Pasuk Yud Beis, the Jewish people finished everything they needed in terms of preparing for Pesach. And it's not written, but, you know, everything that happened was on the first day of Pesach. But obviously the holiday of Pesach finished. It was Motzei Chag, as we'll see. And now they're getting ready for battle. And Hashem hadn't given them any instructions, so he figures we can go out to battle, just like we cross the Jordan with the Ark. We go out for battle. We take the Ark out from the Mishkan in Gilgal. And we get on with the plans to lay the siege on Yericho. So we'll see. So now the Ark is out. So therefore, the Jewish people cannot be engaged. We're busy conquering a land. So we can't bring a Korban. We can't learn Torah. And we can't be engaged in marital relations. Now, the Mefarshim say a number of very interesting insights over here. Number one, how does the Gemara know that he was punished for not having children, for holding back the marital relations? Maybe he was punished for neglecting Torah study or something else, which the other faults were. So he says, well, it's obvious that the punishment of not having children is because he didn't allow people to engage in marital relations. So from the punishment, you see that he was punished for that particular crime and not for the other mistakes. But the Mephorshim say, they speak out over how careful a leader of the Jewish people has to be, because he has to put before himself all the needs of the people at all times, and he can't focus on just one aspect of their needs singularly to the exclusion of other things. So let's look at it over here. Yeshua did not return the ark to its place because he did it figuring it's for the best interest of the people, because we have to protect ourselves from the enemy, and he has to keep laying a siege on them. And as they go out to war, you go out with the ark, and he's obviously very concerned for the safety of the people. But still in all, he's considered making a mistake, because he was only focused on the war effort and on nothing else. He had to focus on all the needs of the people, including marital relations. And even though it might not loom as a large thing, considering we're at war time, but the truth is, it's something that you shouldn't have ignored. And a leader has to make sure that all aspects are taken care of. So again, you know, so the idea being, there's big issues that a leader has to deal with, and there's what we call relatively smaller issues. And it seemed that he pushed off the relatively small issue over here for the bigger issue of conquering the land and the war and everything else. But it cannot be at the expense of other aspects, that if you can, you know, do both, you know, and not surrender one to the other, then, you know, you should be able to accommodate everything. And when we look back in the text, in the Sefer, we'll see exactly how he says this point. But that's a clear concept that he's bringing out over here. That it was possible with a little more forethought that you could have accomplished everything. And a lot of times when you're involved in a big project, the project is the thing, right? The play is the thing, as they say, and everything else can get ignored, but it should not be ignored. Because of how important the main goal is, we can seem to forget about less important goals. And those goals can be accommodated as well. And there are the lower needs, but they should not be excluded. And Yeshua, by being so focused on the war and keeping the ark out, and why didn't he bring it back, etc., etc. So, therefore, he's faulted for not dealing with something that would be relatively assumed to be a more trivial issue. So now, let's look on the next side, on page Memhei, where he elaborates on this, where he explains all the events that are going on. So on Memhei, it says, Chazal omas shulonu beisa layla niskala malach Yeshua. The rabbis don't tell us exactly what night, what was the date that the malach came to Yeshua. Aval yesh laniach, we can suppose, she'eisel l'chol ha'mo'uchar, the latest this could have happened, could be earlier, but the latest it could have happened, b'matzi Shabbos kodesh v'yontav, a'matzi Shabbos and yontav, the last day of Pesach, which was also a Shabbos. Le'el chaf beis v'nisan. To be the 22nd of Nisan, meaning to say the Yom Tov ended on Chaf Aleph, from the 15th through the 21st, and now we're at the beginning of the 22nd of Nisan, which is Matzi Shabbos. Why? Ki rak os nistav Yeshua lahaki v'sa'ir ima aron shishi yom v'pam achas b'yom, because only then did Hashem command Yeshua to circle the city of Yericho 6 times every day. On the 7th, that the walls of Jericho would fall down on the 7th. So it was a full week, and we know that Jericho fell on a Shabbos. So it had to be the latest this whole discussion could have happened was a week before. But before God gave the command, Savru then thought, Jericho tikavish b'derech atachpulos ha-milcham tiot, that they thought that Jericho would be conquered with the normal military strategies. Therefore, they laid siege on the city that night. In other words, when Yom Tov was over, Pesach is over, let's get on with the battle. And the battle begins at night. So they start getting ready for war. And as you get ready for war, you take the ark out. So now, Machana Yisrael Tzorefo Yericho. The Jewish camp is laying a siege on Yericho. Vuosik Yomam Valayla Mitzvahs V'yarashtem Oysov Yishavtem Bo. They're dealing day and night with fulfilling the mitzvah, the Torah, which is to conquer the land and to dwell in it. And we have a principle, Ha'isik B'mitzvah, Poter Bina Mitzvah. A person who's engaged in the mitzvah is free from doing a mitzvah. So now, the ark is found amongst those laying siege around the walls of the city. And as long as the ark and the divine presence are not resting in their proper place, people are not permitted to be engaged in intimacy. If the Shekhinah is not in a desired place, so remember, intimacy is, as we've made analogies quite often, that your house is like a Mishkan, and the bedroom is like the Kodesh Kodashim, and that's where the Ark was with the cherubic-like figures together. So if the cherubic-like figures are not in their place, and there's no intimacy, so to speak, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Mishkan, so there can't be intimacy between husband and wife. It's just reflecting the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah is in distress, so, you know, you can't take care of your own marital needs. Then you come lacking korbanos. You can't bring korbanos either without the aron there. You can't learn Talmud Torah. Can't be learning. Because everybody was engaged in laying siege on the city. When you're in war mode, the other modes seem to fall off. So now the question is, so what was Yeshua's crime? What was his crime for nullifying for one night the mitzvah of intimacy? He was acting according to the way the rules of the Torah are. When the ark is not in its place, we can't, it's not, things aren't normal. What's the measure for measure of the punishment? He only nullified one night. He's punished that he'll never have any sons. Seems pretty severe. And also the afternoon korban offering, the daily offering with Talmud Torah. And also about the Torah. If you're going to be worried that you're not going to be learning Torah, bring a korban, it comes out you'll never lay siege on a city forever. How can you ever conquer? If Hashem's going to criticize you for nullifying Torah and for nullifying a korban because the ark was out, but we can't, but if we, when we go out to war, we go out with the ark. So what's going to happen? We're never going to conquer. So really, it seems Yeshua was correct in what he was doing. So Rashi, Bilshona Hazaka, so Rashi with his beautiful words, Poseach Lanu Pesach Lahavana, he opens up a little bit of a doorway of understanding things. And in Megillah, he says like this, Gemara Megillah says this, Hashima Bishnei Dvarim, he was, the guilt was assigned to him for two things. As it says, Emesh, that's what Gemara says. Emesh, this past day, Klomar, Kesheherev Ayom, when the day began to end, Hayacham Lahakriv Tamid Erev, you should have brought the afternoon offering. Ubitaltim Aso, and you didn't, and you nullified it. Vinishtahisam Bemarve Ha'irchinam, and you stayed, too long in siege of the city for no reason. Why? Shein's man Milchama Balaila. Because nighttime is not a time for war. It gets dark. You don't go to battle. You don't fight wars at night. I mean, nowadays with all the modern technology, you could. But normally, you can't fight a war at night. It's an unwritten rule of war. You don't fight at night. Now it's nighttime. You should be learning Torah. You don't fight at night. So this is what Rashi says. So now what he elaborates a little bit. He says, Their mistake was how they went about going to war. And the mistake was, you don't fight a war at night. So they lingered for no reason in the state of siege unnecessarily. And once you don't fight at night, not only at night was the ark supposed to go back to the camp, turn the page, but as the day was already ending and the sun was setting, already then, they should have put it back. Kedela haspik od lakriv korban tamid. So you'd have the time to bring the korban tamid that has to be brought before nightfall. In other words, you don't fight war 24 hours a day, and therefore you've got to be able to take the ark back in time to bring the korban, and at night people can learn Torah, and at night people can have marital relations. And it was for that mistake Yeshua came to give rebuke. So now, Mayata, from now on, Yedu kol Yisrael shel yibatlu o tamid shel ben arbaim be'erev yom. From now on, the Jewish people knew never to nullify bringing the korban tamid in the late afternoon. I feel of you, asugam ulcham gayom. If they're busy with war all day long, there has to be a stop for war. Gains man mulcham alayla, because there is not the time for war at night. That's why we'll see in the battle of Givon, Yeshua praised Hashem that the sun should stay. He says, I have to finish this war, but if the sun goes down, I gotta go back and bring the korban tamid. I gotta make a little recess to the war, and then I won't have time to finish the war. I'll have to start again tomorrow. So he praised Hashem to not let the sun set, so he can finish the war and then bring the korban. And also they understood from this time, Gam Yedu Shekol Rega Ponim Mimuchama Koidish Hi Lilmo Torah. That they knew that every moment where they're not waging war, it's a holy time to learn Torah. And also Yeshua Bizdamnu Sakro, and that's what Yeshua did at the first opportunity when he fought the battle of Ai, Toch Kedei Havchanosov, the Kibusho Ai, before he had to fight Ai, he went and studied Torah. And also the Malach taught them Talmud Torah, Godel Yosim Akravus Karbonos, that learning Torah is more important than even bringing Karbonos, as it says, Vagisa Bayom Valali should toil in the Torah day and night. Now, Vayos Vahadvarim Hayu Betos, but since what they did was by mistake, they didn't intentionally sin, so Lo Hayu Roshem Velo Nanshu, so it wasn't really made such a big mark, and they didn't get punished. The Jewish people didn't get punished. Ela malach istapek b'tochacha. It was enough that the malach gave some rebuke. V'nislach l'chol adas b'nei Yisrael. And the Jewish people are forgiven. Ki l'chol am bishkagas. Same words, kol nidre, right? Because the whole people were mistaken. Ah, vol Yeshua atzvon nenash. But Yeshua himself was punished. Alav shigam abitul mepir viv yohayim ekoach osatos. Lohi el bishkag. Even though the mistake of not letting them be intimate was by mistake, it was by accident, it was unintentional. Too bad. The pasuk says the awesomeness of Hashem is realized from His holy ones. Al tikur mikdashecha, not from the holy places, rather from your holiness, el mikdushayach, from those who are made holy from you. When Hashem makes a judgment with His holy ones, nisharim misal misal. He is more praised and is more elevated and is more feared. In other words, when Hashem exacts precise judgment from the tzaddikim, we realize that, you know, Hashem is really, He's really the one. And we have to be really careful. So Yeshua was punished as the leader, but nobody else was punished. So, you see how careful a leader has to be. A leader has so much responsibility. Anybody who is in these positions, and everybody is a leader in a certain way. You know, rabbi of a community, father over a family, mother over a family, over the kids. Everybody is a leader in some way that we're mashpia on others. So you got to be awfully careful when you're analyzing things, how every little detail has to be analyzed, and you can't neglect anything. Now, it's very interesting, very beautiful. The Kli Yoker in his Sefer Olas Ephraim says a beautiful. So that explains. Now, 1 second. Let's look at the Pesukim now. So he looks up. He sees someone with a sword out. It's a message that there's something wrong. Obviously, there's something wrong. Something we should have been punished for, but we're not going to be punished for. And he says so. And that's where you for us or against us. So we'll see this other interpretation. He says, well, it's not a question of for or against. It's not a question of battle. I'm not coming out here to help with battle. The problem is, you know, atobasi. I'm coming now for the problems of the now. So Yeshua falls down. He bows down. He gives honor, because really honor for Hashem. So what do you want? So what's the main message? In other words, after he tells them that you neglected Torah study, So Yeshua is saying, so what's the real point of this all? How am I ever going to know? How am I going to know what to do? In other words, you're faulting me for something I didn't even realize. It's a mistake. So, you know, it's going to be a problem. How can I deal with this? So what does the angel say? Take your shoe off your foot. You realize that the place you're standing is very holy. So what kind of answer is that? And Yeshua does that. So what's going on over there? That like really doesn't seem to fit in at all. But we know we've had this before. We had this before with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had to take his shoes off. So what's the idea of taking shoes off? And with this we'll understand a lot of things.
Why the 1 foot?
And 1 foot and 2 foot. Okay, yeah, technically you're right. He told Yeshua to take the shoe off of 1 foot, not 2 foot. Kliyakar talks about it in esoteric ways that I don't want to get into, but simply, the Kliyakar in Sefer Shmos, he says that each foot represents a different aspect of spirituality. And Moshe, when you take off both, shal nalech, when you take off your feet, take off your shoes, shoes represents the non-spiritual aspect of the person. You take off the shoes, it shows that you're spiritually connected. Moshe's both feet was totally spiritually connected. He's like the sun, which wherever you look at it, it radiates holiness. Yeshua's like the moon. One side shines, the other side's dark. Yeshua, one part, in certain areas, was very holy. In other areas, wasn't as holy. 1 foot holy, 1 foot not, so to speak. Moshe was like through and through, like mamish kaddish. No matter, the Kliyakar says one is in seichel and one is in body. That's each foot represents another aspect. So in seichel, Yeshua was unbelievable holy, but in body still he had a body and he thought about his body to whatever degree a human being thinks about a body. So you can take one shoe off but not both. Moshe Rabbeinu could take off both shoes. His mamash like no separation with him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why it could be threatened that Moshe could destroy himself by trying to come close to Hashem. Hashem says, so don't come too close. Don't look. Right? But Yeshua doesn't have to say that. He's already separated by his body. He's not going to penetrate so much into God's world. So there are differences in Kedusha. I don't really want to get into it because it's beyond us. It's beyond us. But that's the idea with the one shoe. But either way, they're taking off a shoe. They're going barefoot. Right? So what's the idea? So the Kliyakar says that a person who's a tzaddik, it's incumbent upon him to really, as we've said, to be sensitive to mistakes. And the smallest mistake could be a very big mistake. And that's what he had over here. One night of not being intimate. So what's one night? We're intimate every other night. What's one night? Who knows what one night? One night, Leah was with Yaakov, she had Yisachar. That's a whole tribe in one night. Who knows what one night can bring, right? That's why it's very important not to push off the mikvah night. Not even one night, for convenience sake. You can't push it off. It's important. It seems trivial. It's not. There's nothing trivial. So now, what message, what mashal can we use? What symbolism can we use to show you have to be sensitive to the little things? And that's the concept of going barefoot. When you came to shul today and you're walking on the street with your shoes, the whole point of shoes is that little pebbles and little things will not be disturbing your foot and your foot won't feel those things and you can move on and walk and that's where you normally walk. But if you're going barefoot, you feel every little pebble, every little thing. You can be awfully careful how you step when you go barefoot. You don't want to step on the rocks. You don't want to step in the dog poo. You got to be awfully careful where you're stepping. And if you're going to step on any place that's not 100% good, you will feel it very quickly. You feel every little thing. You be awfully careful how you walk when you don't have shoes on. So similarly, the tzaddikim, they have to realize, they have to be careful for every little mistake. And therefore Hashem says, you got to walk barefoot. Meaning to say, you will do it once physically. You'll take your shoes off and go walk a few paces without your shoes. And you're going to realize you have to, every step you take is with utmost caution. And any time you feel a little thing, you're going to realize it. He says, now that you put your shoes back on physically, but mentally, always go with your shoes off when you're leading the Jewish people. Beautiful, profound idea in going barefoot. So you can understand now all the other times that we go barefoot. But now the whole concept of going barefoot is very clear. Kohanim, when they dukkan, they have to go barefoot. You are blessing the Jewish people. You got to really be careful in how you're blessing the Jewish people. It has to be ba'ava, with love, and what you're thinking about. You have to be very careful of how you're blessing them. This is not a small thing. On Yom Kippur, we're supposed to go barefoot. I mean, even though it means we don't go with leather shoes, the idea of leather shoes is comfortable. It protects you from the elements. Other types of shoes, you know, in an existential way, is saying, you know, it doesn't protect the foot. That's the idea. It's not protecting the foot. So really, I mean, really, 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 tzaddikim, you know, they're not going in Nikes that are protecting their feet. They even is more comfortable. You know, you go on whatever, very light kind of slippers that you can really feel what's going through anyway. The same idea, it's the symbolism. Yom Kippur, you gotta mamish check everything you do, every little avera. Like a barefoot person, like whatever little, that's not a big thing. No, when you're on barefoot, the littlest thing is important. Yom Kippur requires complete kapara, complete tahara, complete purity. On Yom Kippur, it is all or nothing on Yom Kippur. Every other day it's not, but in Kippur it's all or nothing. Either you're completely with Hashem or you're not. And if you go barefoot, that you're sensitive to little things, that makes all the difference in the world. That's also when you're sitting Shiva. You have to be sensitive to the loss of the person. And that's when you, at the Shiva, you know, what comes out in the Shiva, not the big things that they did, it was the little things, those little things people tell you about that you didn't realize, that those things have to be perpetuated and shouldn't be forgotten, and you have to give proper kavod to the mace. That's why the Jewish people, they suffered greatly, because when Shaul HaMelech died, they didn't maspid him properly, they didn't eulogize him properly. The eulogy is not just at the funeral. It's during all the days of mourning. During the Shiva, you have to eulogize properly even after the eulogies are over. You have to realize what the loss was. You have to be very sensitive to that. And you walk barefoot, as it is. So this idea of barefoot leadership and barefoot thinking of everything that's going on in our lives is something that we just can't let go by so easily. So Hashem is telling Yeshua over here, you've already made one mistake. So I would strongly suggest you go barefoot in your leadership and be awfully sensitive to everything that's going on over here. Moshe Rabbeinu is the leader of the Jewish people. You got to be very sensitive to their needs. And what often happens is, again, we get so involved in our milchamas, in our wars, that we forget that war is not the only state of life. You know, even Lahavdil with the Goyim, they understood that even if there was war, you had to make the USO. You know, I don't know if they still have it. You know, the USO, they would send entertainers and this, you got to build the morale of the troops, right? Singers would come, you know, Bob Hope would give them coffee and make jokes. In other words, you have to deal with the human aspect as much as possible. That's going on over there. Lahavdil. But, you know, you have to make sure there's families behind. There's a lot of things that could happen. And, you know, the army, you know, tries to be sensitive as much as they can to this aspect. But the same thing over here, you gotta be sensitive to life. All aspects. Life, in other words, life, when you go to Muhammad, life doesn't go on hold. Life still continues in as much of a semblance of normalcy as possible. I know you're all looking at this, you guys don't go to war, what's anything to do with this? But that's not so. That's not so, because every day you go to war. Every day you go to war, as my Shver of Blessed Memory would say, and it's really a chazal, he said, Parnasa is milchama. Parnasa is milchama. And really, it's a chazal. He didn't know the chazal, but he understood the concept. Because what do you call bread in Hebrew? Lechem. Lechem is the root. Lamed ches mem is the root of milchama. Milchama just has a mem in front of it and a hey. It's mem and hey and lechem in the middle. It's what you do to get your bread. Ma lechem. What you're doing for the bread. When you boil it all down, what's war all about if not for bread? There's different types of bread, of course. But you go to war to conquer. Why? You want their land, you want their resources. It's always revolved somehow around money, power, bread. That's the bottom line. That's what Muhammad's all about. Every time you go out to make a living, you're all going to go into the car and go downtown, or wherever you're going to go for work, you're going to milchama. And it's mamish a milchama. It's a more sophisticated milchama. Hopefully no one's going to kill anybody. Right? But you know, there is cloak and dagger out in that world of trying to keep your ethics and your morals and your yahadus and everything that goes on in milchama, where the Mesil Shasharim says that you can have the most observant Jew, but when it comes to business, they're totally dishonest. Because they say, what? Business is different. With that one clause, you've thrown everything off. Business is different. And you don't have to adhere to any of the ethical things the Torah says to do. Why? Because I'm in milchama now. What do you expect? I'm in milchama. Milchama, all is fair in love and war. This is milchama. This is my life. You know, I can't be burdened with the details of spirituality when I'm fighting for my life. It's a milchama. And if the milchama means you have to have the milchama on Shabbos, you have the milchama on Shabbos. And if it means you don't come home until a second before Shabbos, you're not even ready for Shabbos, well, that's the price of milchama. To which Chazal is saying it's not true. You got the milchama, you still have to bring the offering. You know, and the Tamid Ben Arbaim, what do we do now in prayer that represents that? What prayer reflects the Tamid Shel Ben Arbaim? It's mincha. Mincha. How many guys don't daven mincha because they're at work? Right? They're bevatel the Tamid Shel Ben Arbaim. What do you mean? I was working. The winter time is 4 o'clock. By 5 o'clock, it's too late. So I was busy with work. I didn't have time. And this is vital. You're mevatel the kor mincha. What do you mean? What do you mean that daven mincha? And especially if you're not that far from a minyan. You're downtown, and to drive 5 minutes, 10 minutes, where you draw the line to be mevatel the korban mincha? I'm not talking to guys, mamish, and you hope it's a 3-hour drive to come back, an hour. Yeah, but you have guys, you know, it's really, it's a schlep. Come on, I gotta repark somewhere else and pay another $6 for parking. I gotta go in the subway for, let's say you're one part of downtown to get the other part of downtown. So you're gonna, mamish, it's gonna spend 10 minutes there and 10 minutes back. It's not worth it. The whole mincha is only 6 minutes where I go. Right, unfortunately, right. So you mevatel the Tamid Shel Ben Arbaim. Why? For milchama. Is that right? Now, Chas V'Shalom, nobody is being malicious here. Chas V'Shalom, no different than Yeshua wasn't being malicious. But he says, what do you mean? I'm in milchama mode. In other words, when we're in a certain mode, everything else seems to be ignored, and you can't ignore it. It's milchama, yes. But then there's a time when it's not milchama. As the sun sets, we don't war anymore. And that's what we're dealing with mamish your life. But that's how people really feel their work is. It's mamish milchama. To lose a customer is like losing a battle. You know how many years I did to cultivate that customer? And now we have an appointment at 4:15 and I've been busy all day and I'm going to have to miss mincha because of the customer. You want me to lose a milchama? The answer is no, but time is getting nighttime. It's not time for more. You have to know when to stop warring. And you have to let Hashem fight a few of your battles. Right? And the same thing talks about Puruvu. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. You're out to war all day long. You're exhausted. You come home at night from the battlefields at 11 o'clock, and you don't have the time to show the proper affection to your spouses. All right? So you're going to be mevatel that as well. And Kol Shekein learning Torah. I don't have to talk about that one. People don't learn Torah because they have to go to work. It's mamish the excuse under the world. You know, what do you mean? Can't you come to class at night? I have a client at night. I have this at night. I have that in the day. I have this. So what happens? I mean, just think about it. Think about what work, what are the casualties of war to our souls? It's these three. Because the work guys don't learn Torah, because the work guys don't have milcha. Shachris Chach will do. Because it's before we start. We do it early enough. We can daven. Chakras, okay. That we can get. Maybe Marav, maybe we can get. But mincha, gone. It just ain't gonna happen. And certainly the relationships with our spouses suffer greatly because of work as well. So that's why when you gotta go to work in your bare feet. Existentially, go in your bare feet and be sensitive to these other aspects. And you have to be awfully careful. And Yeshua was punished. He was punished that he didn't have any sons. And the truth is, this becomes our own self-inflicted punishments. Either people decide, you know, now we're so different. People decide that they shouldn't have too many children. So they already self-inflict that punishment not to have children. Because, of course, it's a milchama. How much money am I making? I'm not going to make enough to have another kid. So those are the casualties as well. So that's the real message, the take-home message. Baruch Hashem gave it to me right now. I didn't. Only because I have to give the class. Hashem has to give me something to say. So, but that's mamish what Klal Yisrael is required to do. Is to always be focused on these things. And you need a malach taka to say, you know, what to do. Okay, there's another aspect here, but we can't get into that now. But there's one more aspect that has to do in terms of milchama, actual milchama, and how milchama should be fought, in Eretz Yisrael. And we'll talk about that tomorrow, Mirzah Shem.